Well, we've heard about the four blood moons. We've heard about the mystery of the Shemitah. Is God trying to get our attention this September, or is this just a lot of hype?
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Hey friends, it is Thoroughly Jewish Thursday on the Line of Fire. That means any Jewish-related question that you have that you'd like to ask me, any Jewish-related question whatsoever, questions relating to Israel today, questions on Blood Moon, Shemitah, something major coming this month of September, the High Holy Days, and on, we'll take questions on that today, 866-348-7884. If you're a Jewish listener and don't agree with my views about Jesus the Messiah and would like to tell us why, that is wonderful. Glad to hear from you. Love to talk with you. Joey, grab clip number 9. Donald Trump joined Senator Ted Cruz for a major rally against the Iran deal, a major rally against this nuclear treaty, which, hey listen, I cannot see a single good reason for this treaty. I join those who are denouncing it. Shame on those who are not willing to vote against it and go against the president. But listen to what Donald Trump had to say. Clip number 9.
All of these countries are going to do business with Iran. They're going to make lots of money and lots of other things with Iran. And we're going to do, and we're going to get nothing, nothing. We are led by very, very stupid people. Very, very stupid people.
That's why some people love Donald Trump, and that's why some people hate Donald Trump. You hear what got a reaction from the crowd, though. But listen, the decision is a stupid decision. My good friend, Rabbi Shmuley Boteach, has been leading the charge calling on Senator Cory Booker, former Mayor Booker, but a longtime close friend of Rabbi Shmuley. I remember when I attended the wedding of Rabbi Shmuley's eldest daughter, seeing how close he and Cory were as friends at the wedding. Cory Booker, who after explaining why it's a terrible deal and a wrong deal and on, has said that he's not going to oppose the deal, which has caused Shmuley to go public against him on this issue as a friend. We're not going to focus on the Iran deal, but to me it is nothing less than madness. And what does the Supreme Leader of Iran, Ayatollah Khamenei, say, what, a couple days ago? That Israel won't exist in 25 years. That's what he's saying. Our peace partner, a reasonable peace partner. This is absolutely absurd. It is. And look, even the argument, well, they won't be able to have nuclear arms for what, 10 or 15 years. Oh, and then, even if it was going to be 10 or 15 years, and then, you, how would we feel about that? Let's say ISIS was all of Mexico was ISIS, all right? And they didn't have nuclear bombs. But now America was working out a treaty with them to have nuclear bombs in 10 years, and they're still saying, okay, and America won't exist in 20. We would sign that treaty? Are you kidding me? It is nothing less than governmental madness. We've got my view on that. We've got a lot to talk about today, a whole lot of things. I want to go slightly off Thoroughly Jewish Thursday topic when we come back. And just weigh in on some ridiculous statements by Shep Smith and guest on Dr. Drew's show. I want to do that, and then we'll take your calls on Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. This is Michael Brown. We'll be right back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
It was a broken leg.
Well, they've set this up as a religious play again. This is the same crowd that says we don't want Sharia law. Don't let them come in here and start telling us what to do. Keep their religion out of our lives and out of our government. Well, here we go again.
That was the voice of Shepard Smith on Fox News, taking an outrageously anti-Christian position, even saying that those who have a problem recognizing marriage as the union of a man and a woman, like all of virtually all human history through the ages and American history up until recently, and according to beliefs of several billion people around the world and the clear teaching of Scripture, no, 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 no. If you have any problem at all and say, I cannot agree with two men or with two women, quote, being married, you're a hater. Calls us haters. And now he's going to compare this to Sharia law. We're not talking about throwing gays off buildings. We're not talking about beheading people. We're not talking about killing people if they change faiths. We're simply saying, don't force me to be complicit in saying that the union of two men or two women is a wedding. This is what's called freedom of religion. Our nation was founded on that. Oh, but Shepard Smith had more to say. Clip number 11.
When this started, this lawyer said he needed an accommodation for a woman who wanted one. She said she didn't want her name on a license for gay people. They couldn't come up with an accommodation. Now they've come up with one. They've let her out of jail, said, all right, you don't have to have your name on there. We just put the name of the county on there. All this is done. But it's not what they want. You're hearing now what they want. This is what they want. And this is what they're going to get. They're going to get a stirred up argument, and they're going to be able to make these claims. And the truth is, when you get right down to the fundamentals of this, the Supreme Court of the United States says that you can't have things being okay for one group of people and not okay for another group of people. This is not unprecedented. They did it when they said that black and white people couldn't marry. And they said, oh, wait, I guess you can. And now they've said straight people and gay people can also all get married. You want to get married? Go right at it. The government's not going to get in the way of you any more than they did in the way of the straight people back in the day. But their haters are going to hate.
Haters are going to hate. Mr. Smith, do you really not see a difference when you have blacks and whites, a male and female, and simply saying because of the color of your skin we have an issue with it, rather than radically redefining marriage to something it's never been? Do you honestly not see the difference? And would you have just sat by idly with Dred Scott and said, no problem, Supreme Court's ruled, blacks are not fully human beings, we just go with it? Seriously? Come on. Well, let's take this a little further. Matt Staver, the guy you call this lawyer, this guy elsewhere, a prominent Christian leader in America, why the disparagement towards him? You know what he's most excited about? Kim Davis's testimony about Jesus changing your life, getting out. I ran into him at the airport the other day. We were chatting. That's what he was most excited about, that God had mercy on this woman who was an adulterer, who was divorced multiple times, kids out of wedlock. God had mercy on her and changed her, and now is a woman of Christian conviction. She's simply saying, I do not want this to be done under my authority. And there was not a clear accommodation that the court was giving yet. Can you not see that there is more to this equation than hatred, bigotry, and a Christian version of Sharia law, Mr. Smith? You're a journalist. You're a newscaster. Surely you must see the bias and bigotry and small-mindedness in your own words. But it gets worse. This is radio host Mike Catherwood. He is on the Dr. Drew Show, clip number 8.
All of those people holding crosses and saying she's a super Christian. No, she's not.
She got pregnant with twins out of wedlock.
Did they stone her?
No. Here's Leviticus 20:10. Both the man and the woman must die.
Like Mike Huckabee says, sign me up. I'll do it. I'll go kill her and whatever toothless redneck. By the way, who's the creepy giant farmer behind them? Why does that, like, what is that, what does that do?
This is madness. This is madness. They're joking. I'll go kill her. They're joking about this. First, do you not understand forgiveness? Do you not understand that the woman messed up and then came to Jesus and was forgiven? Just like if two gay men came to Jesus, they've been sleeping together in a relationship, they'd be forgiven and could start a new life and then be changed and live holy lives. That's the whole message of the cross. Forgiveness for the worst of sinners. To the woman caught in adultery, I don't condemn you, but go and sin no more. Kim Davis has sought to turn her life around. What do these folks do? They mock it. And no one is saying put homosexuals to death. What we're simply saying is there was a prohibition against homosexual practice in the Old Testament, and it continues into the New Testament as well. But we don't stone people to death now. We simply warn them about the consequences of rejecting God's ways, and we recognize sin as sin. This is Dr. Drew, the respected Dr. Drew. And here they are just going at it. If you want to see hatred, you want to see bigotry, you want to see dangerous words, listen to what these folks are saying. Matt, let's play clip number 13. This is Erica Williams-Simon, also on Dr. Drew.
This is not what faith is about. This is not what values are about. When I see that, again, as someone who identifies as a Christian, when I think of my faith, I think of helping the poor, helping the least of these. Why are we not having conversations around religion that have to do with economic inequality, that have to do with injustice? Why every time that we talk about Christianity, is it about blocking someone else's civil rights? That makes no sense to
right.
me.
Ah, what is happening day and night around the world through Christians feeding the poor? Caring for the needy, World Vision, Samaritan's Purse, organizations like that, working to sponsor children, refugees, people in need, hurting around the world. This is happening day and night. Secular media, Dr. Drew, Shepard Smith, Erica Williams-Simon, you want to talk about this? We'll give you a story every single day. Hey, just from our own ministry. And just from the graduates of Fire School of Ministry, just one little school, one little ministry, we could give you stories. You could report on these one a day for months and months to come. Caring for the poor, caring for the needy, helping the hurting, combating human trafficking. We'll give you story after story after story. Doesn't seem that that's what you want to talk about that much. But have one Christian who says, I have to act on my conscience. Now it gets national attention. Seems the secular media is the one making a big case about that. Let me go a little further, though. What if things were different? What if the Supreme Court back in June said, no, marriage is what it's always been. It's the union of a man and a woman, and we don't recognize same-sex so-called marriage. What if Kennedy had gone the other way, and it was 5-4 the other way, and you had a Christian clerk, and this Christian clerk said, until my gay brothers and sisters can get married, I am not issuing any licenses. People would say, that's Christianity. That's standing for justice. The same ones that are bashing Kim Davis would be standing up for that person and say, you're a champion, just like they stood up for Mayor Gavin Newsom in San Francisco. Let's expose the hypocrisy. And if you want real stories about Christianity, along with standing up for what's right, as Kim Davis has done, if you want real stories, we'll give them to you. They're happening day and night around the world. And then what about the subject of the persecuted church and people standing strong in the Muslim world, even Muslims coming to faith? Secular media, CNN, Fox, how about reporting on that? 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Let us go to the phones. It is Thoroughly Jewish Thursday, but I wanted to get that out. Let's go to the Plains, Virginia. Zechariah, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Thank you, Dr. Brown. How are you today?
Doing well, thank you.
Hey, you know, back on the Saran thing, it just looks like, you know, history's repeating itself. You know, same characters at work here. We have the Jewish people, and you have the Persians, the Iranians again, and we have a Haman there wanting to kill all the Jews on the planet. He's rallied his allies, got the signature from the king to go and do it, and since he's signed the Saran deal and the seven-headed beast now that's been created, you know, he's emboldened himself to now proclaim that within 25 years, Israel will be destroyed. They will no longer be there. And if I were Iran, I would be looking at the Book of Esther, and I would be saying, you know what? We're not going to build nuclear weapons. Let's get away from nuclear weapons because we're going to be hung on those gallows.
Zechariah, what you're saying is very profound in terms of it's happened before. It has happened before. Now look, the Holocaust took place and 2 out of 3 Jews in Europe were slaughtered. There's been great suffering in Jewish history. And obviously, there's a reason for Israel to be concerned. There's a reason for Jews worldwide to be concerned. But the parallels you draw and the way you draw them, well said. Iran, Ayatollah Khomeini, read the book of Esther. Read the book of Esther. President Obama, read the book of Esther. Remember, in case you don't know, Persia then is Iran today. Thank you for the call. We will be right back.
The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
It's 30 Jewish Thursday on the Line of Fire. This is Michael Brown. I'm delighted to be with you. Okay, everybody, where are you going to be? Everybody listening to me on WMCA, everybody listening in the greater New York area, where are you going to be next Thursday night, a week from tonight, 7:30 in the evening? That's right, with me, face-to-face. If you're listening on other stations not that far out of New York, join me. Come on, drive down from Maine and Rhode Island and Massachusetts. Drive down and join us. Would you do that? And I'm going to be at Bethlehem Assembly of God. Bethlehem Assembly of God. Valley Stream, that's 12 East Fairview Avenue. We're going to have a special Mordecai Will Not Bow rally. Your faith will be, you'll be stirred. We'll be talking about the cultural issues, how the church can stand. I'm telling you, you'll be ignited, stirred, encouraged, blessed. So join me. That's this coming Thursday night, a week from tonight, 7:30 p.m., Bethlehem Assembly of God. That's 12 East Fairview Avenue. If you are a pastor leader, this is only pastors and leaders. In the daytime, we'll be having special teaching and equipping. Go to the website, Bethlehem Assembly of God website, to find out more. And at night, everyone, join me. I'm also going to be doing a book signing for Outlasting the Gay Revolution. If you already have the book, bring it. I'll sign it. Otherwise, we'll be doing the book signing for you there. We'll have the books present. So tell a friend. Love to pack the place out and have a really, really special night. September 17th, a week from tonight, New York. That is Valley Stream, right on the edge of Queens and Long Island, right on Long Island. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Manassas, Virginia. Joseph, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Thanks for having me. I had a quick question about Deuteronomy 31. In verse 6 and 8, it says, the Lord is speaking to Moses, and he says, I won't forsake you. He's talking about the children of Israel. And in verse 17, he says, then I will forsake them. And I looked at the Hebrew. I know a little bit, and it looks like it's the same verb. It says, lo, yaz, it's azav.
The roots azav, to forsake. Yeah, so verse 6 is v'lo yazvecha, I will not forsake you. And then you said verse 17?
Yes.
Yep.
Azav tihem, I think is what it said.
Mm-hmm.
I know God doesn't contradict himself, so I was just wondering if you could help me understand.
Yeah, one thing is a promise that God's given. So if you go back to verse 6, so God's telling his people, I'll be strong, be of good courage, I won't forsake you. But then saying, if you disobey me, I will forsake you. So it's very simple. I'll be with you. If you honor me and do what's right, doesn't matter what enemies you face, doesn't matter what demons you face, doesn't matter who comes against you, I'll be with you. There'll be nothing that you can't handle because I'll be with you. However, if you sin against me, if you turn your back on me, if you give yourselves to idols and adultery and idolatry, I will forsake you. So like all of the promises under the Sinai Covenant, and even throughout Scripture, they're conditional. A parallel would be Jeremiah 18, where God says, I'm going to bless a particular nation, and then that nation turns to sin. God says, instead of blessing me, I'll judge you. If he says he's going to judge a particular nation, and that nation turns away from sin, instead of judging, he'll bless. So the same way he gave great promises, I'll never forsake you. If you honor me, do what's right, you'll never be on your own. You'll never be left alone. However, if you sin against me, I will abandon you.
Okay. So does that, when they did sin against the Lord and he did turn away from them, did that completely make the Sinai Covenant invalid forever? Or?
Okay. So, no, the next part of your question. No, it didn't make it invalid forever. If they would repent, then he'd have mercy and restore. That was always the promise. We have that laid out very plainly in Deuteronomy 30. After all these curses have come upon you, you're scattered throughout the world, then turn, then repent. God will have mercy. What happened, though, was the repeated failures of the Sinai Covenant highlighted ultimately after the prophecies of Jeremiah and the kingship of Josiah, when the nation collapses and the temple is destroyed and the Jewish people go into exile. At that point, God says, well, the day is going to come and I'm going to make a better covenant, because you keep breaking the Sinai Covenant and you're unable to keep it, so I'm going to give a better one, and that's the new covenant that we enjoy today. But even though when God forsook, they were still his people. He was not fighting for them the same way. He let them be defeated by their enemies, but he was still their God. He was still the God of Israel. I think if you look in Hosea 1 and 2, you'll get further perspective on this as well. Hey, Joseph, thank you for the call and the questions, and for working on that Hebrew. Well done. 866-34-TRUTH. All right, I'm going to talk about blood moons. Paul, I want to go to your call next, and everybody else stay right there. I'm going to get to all your calls. If you appreciate the work that we are doing, if you appreciate our work in Jewish ministry, how many radio broadcasts do you know of that have a thoroughly Jewish Thursday that cover what we cover, and then have this focus on Israel and the Jewish people, and that'll delve into what the Hebrew says, and are actively reaching out to Jewish people in Israel, in America, around the world. By God's grace, we do have a unique role to play. We're just one of many, but this is part of our niche, and it's important that the whole body stand behind Jewish ministry. If you have been blessed by the spiritual resources of the Jewish people through Jesus the Messiah and the prophets and the apostles, Paul says to Gentile believers in Romans 15, then you owe it to help in the natural. So I want to encourage you, if you have been blessed spiritually by this radio broadcast and by the ministry work that we're doing, being on the front lines of equipping the church with understanding about Israel, with helping to reach the lost sheep of the house of Israel, if you appreciate the work we're doing, why not become a torchbearer? Why not join our support team? This is not to put a dime in my pocket. This is to help us reach more people. This is to help us develop a much more effective Jewish ministry. We've got some great plans. The only thing holding us back from completely launching them is we need more funding to get more presence to help those Jewish people who are seeking and inquiring. The harvest is ripe. We're seeking to raise up more laborers and reach more lost Jewish people, but we need your help to do it. So become a partner, become a torchbearer. We've got a great and growing team that is the backbone of this ministry in so many ways. And all you do is this: put aside a dollar a day or more. Some of you could put aside 10 a day and wouldn't even feel it. Some, a dollar a day is a real stretch in faith. But whatever you're able to do, a dollar a day or more, $30 or more per month, you become part of our support team. Not only would I send you a special book as a thank you gift to help equip and strengthen you, but every month I'll send you a brand new message that's just been preached or taught to edify you. Whenever you order from our online bookstore, you get a 15% discount from all of our resources, whatever the amount. And we also give you free access to online classes that otherwise would cost you $75 just to take the class. It's our way of saying thank you and equipping you to be a world changer. So become a torchbearer today. Give us a call at 1-800-278-9978, 1-800-278-9978, or go to the website, Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org. Click on donate. Thank you in advance for joining our team.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to Thoroughly Jewish Thursday, 866-34-TRUTH. You've got Jewish-related questions. We've got answers. We go to Johnston, Rhode Island. Paul, thanks for holding. Welcome to the line of fire.
Yes, Dr. Someone has given me a book. The name of this book is Four Blood Moons, Your Future Begins Now, by an author by the name of Larry Hutch, I believe it is, H-U-C-H.
Uh-huh.
And he talks about the blood moons. He talks about, I'll make one quote for you and see what you think about him, about the quote, about the book.
Yep.
It says, 8 is God's number for man, living above the limitations of the natural. It's living in the supernatural. It's your time for a new beginning. What do you think?
I think that this is another author, teacher, TV personality jumping on the Four Blood Moons bandwagon with a personal success and prosperity message that I reject. Now, I haven't read the book. I don't know everything that's in it. I'm simply responding to that quote and the title of the book. Now, a couple separate things, Paul. The question of the Four Blood Moons that Mark Bills has talked about and others have talked about and John Hagee has further popularized, that to me is a valid question. In other words, are there signs in the heavens? Is God getting our attention? Is this month of September the beginning or the end of a major period of shaking? What will take place during this time? That's fair to me. That's a fair question. In other words, is God at work in a visible, tangible way through astronomical phenomena that are getting our attention? Well, that could well be. That's been used by God in the past. Natural disasters have been used by God to get our attention. The Bible speaks about the sun and the moon and stars being for not just signs and seasons, but for appointed times. So is it possible? Sure. And could something be happening now? Sure. How will we know? Well, we'll see. In other words, we're coming to the end of this four blood moon cycle, these lunar eclipses that have all tied in with high holy days on the biblical calendar. Is there something to it? Well, we'll see. If things dramatic happen, and if there are worldwide events that affect Israel, that affect the nations, then we could say God's trying to get our attention. And if nothing happens, then it was just interesting astronomical phenomena. However, to now turn this around, that this is now the message for the new beginning and your own life and personal prosperity and blessing and success, that to me is just getting on a hype bandwagon. That to me is just the latest fad, the latest trend, and I'm going to write a book to get that message out. It doesn't mean the author isn't sincere. It doesn't mean that he's just doing this to try to sell a book or make money. But to me, it's very suspicious, and I see zero biblical support for it.
Okay. I want to thank you very much, then.
You're welcome. Now, look, keep reading the book and evaluate what it says based on Scripture. But I am simply responding to the title and the thesis. And based on the little that I know of the author, I would think that the title and the thesis you read are representative. So thanks, Paul. I don't know if you're in favor of the book or not, but you got my honest viewpoint. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's see. Don't have time to go to the phones now. As soon as we come back, I'm going to go right back to the phones. Jeremiah and Sharon, stay right where you are. If you've got a Jewish-related question, we'll give you a Jewish-related answer. 866-348-7884. And keep your questions coming on the book of Job. I'm translating Job now from Hebrew to supplement my commentary. So Job is ever before me. So if you get some Job-related questions, always glad to take them. 866-34-TRUTH.
Flame, send the fire.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Run and flee at the mention of your name, King of Majesty. There is no
welcome back to Thoroughly Jewish Thursday with Michael Brown. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go back to the phones and we go to Brooklyn. Jeremiah, welcome to the Line of Fire.
God bless you, Dr. Brown. It's a pleasure to be on your program. I enjoy and I give God thanks that he's using men like you to bring out his word, because that's one thing that this time and world that we need nowadays, we need to preach the word. I just wanted to comment, to me, as a Christian, I think we're giving too much permanence on all these things that are happening, not in a bad way. We should acknowledge them, but we have to understand, as Christians, none of this should shake us. If we're standing on the truth, none of this should be shaking us. None of this should worry us. What it should do to us is promote us to even get into God's presence, to look for his presence more, to want to preach the truth, to reach those with the gospel of Jesus Christ. We get this too much. I want to read a scripture in Acts. Even the disciples told the Lord Jesus Christ that they wanted to know the times and the season. And even he told them that it wasn't in their, it says, and he said unto them, it is not for you to know the times of the season which the Father has put in his own power. And as a church, what we need to do is stand up on the truth, preach the truth, go out there, preach against sin, because that's the problem with the church. The problem with the church and with all this political things, you have political people up there that call themselves Christian, but when it comes to topics like these, they bow down to sin. Because a political figure has to do that to please people. Even though they may be Christians or call themselves Christians, sooner or later, to get these people to vote to them, they must bow down to that stature like Nebuchadnezzar did. That's why those three Hebrew children, even though they were in permanence, they told them, you know what? If God save us from your fiery furnace or not, one thing we're going to let you know, that we will not bow down to that stature. Because we believe in God.
Yeah, Jeremiah. Let me jump in, but let me just point out the two things in what you said. First, I absolutely agree with you that our focus always has to be glorifying Jesus, preaching the gospel to the lost, making disciples. Always, 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 that needs to be our focus. We can never get away from that. And you're right, when we begin to look to different Christian politicians and think, okay, they're going to lead the way. Now, hopefully one of them will stand up and not be a compromiser. But often, yeah, you've got to make arrangements along the way. You compromise a little bit here and there to increase your base. And before you know it, you're compromised. But I want to point out, though, that there are times when your back is put against the wall, like with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in Daniel, the third chapter. And you are told, bow down or suffer the consequences. And as believers, we have to say, we're not going to bow down. But I agree with you. We can sometimes get so worked up over political things, social things, prophecy things, that we forget our mission. And yes, I agree with you. Under no circumstances should we be moved. So we stand strong. We keep our focus where it belongs. We understand the times and seasons, but we're not moved by them. I appreciate you calling in and reminding us of that. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Fort Lee, New Jersey. Sharon, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hi, Doctor. Regarding this Iran deal, now that the Democrats voted for this deal, that means they stand with the Iran mullahs, or the Iranian government. That means the Democrat Party, therefore, believes in death to Israel, death to America, wipe Israel off the map. They're standing, the Democrat Party has to be demonized, and we've already called Ted Cruz, the campaign of Donald Trump, and they're going to say it. We've got to start saying the Democrat Party is anti-Israel, anti-U.S. security, and anti-Semitic. Because, and it's not too harsh. I don't want to hear from the coward Republicans and conservatives are not cowards. It's not too harsh, because if this was the other way around, Doctor, and Republicans had this despicable Iranian deal, the Democrats and the liberal media would be saying Republicans hate Jews, Republicans are anti-Israel, Republicans are anti-Semitic. They'd be saying that 24/7. Democrats accuse Republicans every week of a new group that they hate, and Republicans just sit there and take it. We're sick of this. This is why a lot of us like Trump, but I like Ted Cruz even more, but whatever.
Yeah, but yeah, listen, but Sharon, just to weigh in here for a moment, I would phrase this as questions. Iran says this. Do you support that? Iran says death to Israel, death to America. Do you support that? Iran says Israel will not exist in 25 years. Do you support that? Iran is renewing its financial commitment to Hamas and Hezbollah and these mortal enemies of Israel that want to destroy the Jewish people living in the land of Israel. Do you support that? Do you recognize that this is where the money is going? Well, if the answer is no, 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 then why are you signing that treaty? Expose it for what it is. And say, if you're not anti-Semitic, and if you're not anti-Israel, and if you're not pro-radical Islam, then prove it by not signing. Thanks, Sharon. I appreciate it. 866-34-TRUTH. We'll go over to Madison, New Jersey. Ann, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Yes, thank you, Dr. Brown, for all your work. Just two comments about the Kim Davis situation. Recognizing that people in the work environment have religious consciences is not something radically new. I mean, there are people who have refused to work on Saturday or Sunday, or those who refuse to assist in abortions. And my other comment is this what our country has come down to, that we are all expected to be robots with no consciences on our jobs? And those are my two comments.
Yeah, and Anne, it is Thoroughly Jewish Thursday for our listeners. You're going back to comments I made in a monologue earlier in the broadcast, where I took on Shepard Smith and guests on Dr. Drew's show and blasted away at their biased, bigoted, ugly statements regarding Kim Davis and regarding religious liberties. Yeah, this is nothing new, and this is nothing to make a big deal about, except to make a big deal about the pressure that's coming against us so that we can't freely practice what we believe, and that we are now being told to do something that is in fundamental violation of the faith of millions of Americans and billions worldwide. How far will it go? There will be a backlash. There will be a pushback. My book, Outlasting the Gay Revolution, is calling for that very thing. Not time to throw in the towel, time to push back. But let's expose this for what it is. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Sterling, Virginia. Teresa, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Oh, hello. Hi.
Hello.
All right, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay. I just had a question about what you were talking about earlier.
Yes, go ahead.
When you were talking to the Jewish people, were you trying to turn the Jews to Jesus?
My deep goal and desire is to help every Jewish person in the world embrace Jesus as the Messiah. I am a Jew, a follower of Jesus, and my desire is to see all of my fellow Jews become followers of Jesus. It does not mean we cease to be Jewish. It does not mean conversion to Christianity. It means recognizing Jesus as Messiah and Lord. just as Paul and Peter and John did, all of the apostles, the emissaries, all Jews, just as my wife Nancy and I do as Jews, as followers of Jesus. So, yes, my goal is for every Jewish person, every rabbi, every secular Jew in America and Israel, around the world, to become a follower of Jesus. I work towards that on a regular basis. I've written on that. I've spoken on it. I've debated on it. I pray for it. And it's certainly God's heart and God's desire. So we come back on the other side of the break. Tell me why you're asking.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown. God of burning, can compare, who can compare
to your great love? None can compare. Thanks for joining us today on Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. Michael Brown, delighted to be with you. 866-34-TRUTH. So, Teresa and Sterling, yes, so what was the reason for your question?
Well, I came into your broadcast like 5 minutes late. I always listen to WAVA, Assistance Station, you know, when I'm driving around. So, when I came in 5 minutes late, I think I misunderstood. I was just trying to figure out what you were talking about when it came to the Jewish people, because when I read the Bible, it says, you know, only 144,000 Jewish people are going to make it into heaven. So
where do you find that?
In my Bible.
Where?
Revelation.
I appreciate you reading the scriptures, but Revelation, the 7th chapter, in a symbolic vision, speaks of 144,000, all men, purified virgins. What it's speaking of is the fullness of Israel. It's 12,000 from 12 tribes. It's a prophetic vision of the fullness of Israel. It's not limiting the number. There are more than 144,000 Jewish believers in Jesus today. Throughout centuries, there have been hundreds of thousands, several million through the centuries, Jewish followers of Jesus. And Paul says in Romans 11:26 that at the end of the age, all Israel will be saved, that the whole nation will turn. So there are more than 144,000 of us now.
Well, that's what I was confused about. You know, that's why I get confused. I even hear it in my sermon at my Methodist church, you know, how many Jews are going to make it into heaven. And it really confuses me. I'm like, that cannot be right.
No, that's not right. That's absolutely not right. What they did is they took
a symbolic version.
The King James is not the problem. What it is they took a symbolic vision in the book of Revelation, which is filled with all types of mysterious symbols and figures and things like that, and they made that into a literal number. What it is the 12,000 from 12 tribes symbolizes fullness. It symbolizes the fullness of the salvation of Israel, and that's why Paul said at the end of the age that there'll be a national turning of Jewish people, and Jews from around the world will embrace Jesus as the Messiah. So in every generation, we've had a number, a remnant. In other words, right now, let's say the world population of Jews is, say, 14 million. Let's just say there are 200,000 Jewish believers in Jesus now. It's probably a low number, but let's just say that's the total number. So what? That's maybe 1.5% of the total population. At times past in history, it may have been a little higher, may have been lower. So there's always been this remnant, whether it's 1% or 3% or whatever. But at the end of the age, we believe it'll be the overwhelming majority. So hopefully that will mean millions and millions of Jewish people turning to Jesus the Messiah. Right now,
I hope so.
Yeah. And right now, we're jealous for every single individual, every single Jewish person to come and know Jesus as Messiah. What's interesting, though, Teresa, is that most Jews in America come to faith not through hearing the gospel through a Jew, but through a Gentile, a Christian like you that shares the gospel with a Jewish person. That's how most Jews in America get saved. So never be concerned if you meet a Jewish person, they ask what you believe, say, you know, I love Jewish people and Jesus is a Jew, and talk to them freely. And if they have a question, just tell them go to realmessiah.com, realmessiah.com, our Jewish website, for more answers. But thank you for calling, and I'm so glad we got to clarify the question. No, 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 there's not a limit of only 144,000 Jews who get in. Thank you for asking that. 866-34-TRUTH. We go to Boston, Massachusetts. Steve, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Oh, thanks for having me on. I've heard you over the years here in Boston. I used to have a radio program on myself on WROL. Question I have is very significant. There's a dangerous doctrine that's originated in the Protestant Reformation, not in the Catholic Church, in the Reformation, whereby you have theologians teaching there's a satanic bloodline covenant that originated in Genesis chapter 6 with, if you will, the sons of God entering women, whereby, I'll be right in to pick up the equipment, and then whereby the Jewish people that Jesus were preaching to in John chapter 4, Salvation of the Jews, there's a distinction between an Israelite, a Hebrew, and a Jew. My question to you is that when you read the original Aramaic, the Hebrew, and the Greek, before you get to the Latin Vulgate that was given to us through the Catholic Church in 381 A.D. with Pope Damasus, when you get into that distinction, it's a very dangerous doctrine whereby you have reformers teaching in some ways that many Jews will not come to Jesus Christ because in some way they're predestined to hell in some way because of not just the rejection of Jesus as the Jewish Messiah, but this satanic bloodline covenant that they
That's crazy. Yeah, you're read it in English, read it in Hebrew, read it in Greek, read it in Aramaic, read it in Chinese. Absolutely crazy. No question whatsoever. So
they try, here's the question. They try to say that when Jesus is preaching to the Jews, and wherever you read the word Jews in the gospel, that that's Judean. In other words, that there's a distinction being made. Is that true? Whenever you see Israelite, Hebrew, or Jew, that's all referring to the 12 tribes, the descendants who came out of captivity.
Whenever you see Israelite, 12 tribes, of course, that's referring to the nation as a whole. When you see Jew in the Gospel of John in particular, sometimes it's referring to Jewish leaders. Sometimes it's referring to Judeans because it's very clear. It's geographic. He's concerned about going into Judea because of the Judeans. It would be the same in Hebrew with Yehudi, that could refer to Jews in general or Judeans in particular. However, when you have a generic statement, salvation is of the Jews in John chapter 4, when you have other specific statements that refer to Jewish people as a whole, to restrict that to the Judeans is completely wrong. So it's all a matter of context in the Gospel of John. If you look, for example, in the Complete Jewish Bible, the Stern translation, if you look in the Complete Jewish Bible, you'll see that it will often distinguish between Judeans and Jews, or the Tree of Life version would seek to do that as well. But when you have a statement, salvation is of the Jews, and he's telling Samaritans why they don't understand what real salvation is, because it's been something entrusted to the Jewish people, or where Paul says in Romans 3 that to the Jews have been entrusted the oracles of God, that is not saying Judeans. It's Jews generically. So Steve, that's to say that certain Jews aren't going to be saved because there's some satanic bloodline is just nonsense, utter nonsense. Thank you for the call. 866-34-TRUTH. Tell you what, stay on the phones right now. I will take your calls the beginning of the next hour. This is Michael Brown. It is Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. Be sure to check out our special resource offer on the website by going to Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org. Check out the special resource offer. You will be blessed as you do. And stand with us. If you appreciate this ministry, if you enjoy the radio broadcast, then if you've been fed and blessed, then stand with us and help us. Just like if you went to a restaurant at the end of the meal, you pay the bill. The same way we are listener sponsored. We're on because of your gracious help. So go to the website, askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown. Become a monthly supporter, or your one-time gift would really help. My bottom line today, we can speculate about blood moons and mysterious things happening this month. We shall watch and see what unfolds. Well, we've heard about the four blood moons. We've heard about the mystery of the Shemitah. Is God trying to get our attention this September, or is this just a lot of hype?
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
First of all, I'm a Zionist, and second of all, I've got lots of Christian friends in the Middle East, and they're not even hiding it. They're claiming, ISIS have said, anybody who doesn't become Islamist, they will cut off their hands and feet and crucify them.
Israel has a right to defend herself, and the opposition over there just now are trying to create a new narrative, not based upon truth, but based upon misinformation.
So Prime Minister Netanyahu flying into London to meet the Prime Minister of England, and there are protests against him. There is a petition calling for the arrest of Netanyahu on war crimes. And so protests pro and con going on, a lot of things heating up in England. And always controversy around Prime Minister Netanyahu in nations of the world because he is leading strongly. Not a perfect man, but leading strongly. This is Michael Brown. Welcome to The Line of Fire, our Thursday edition, which means Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. We had some great callers in the first hour, and the phone lines are open. So here's the deal. If you want to talk to me about anything Jewish, if you want to talk to me about the Hebrew language, about Israel and Iran and the Muslim world today, if you want to talk about Jesus being the Messiah and heard objections to that, you're trying to sort out. If you're a Jewish person and you don't agree with me about Jesus, the phone lines are open, 866-348-7884. A few weeks back, let me see if I can find exactly when this was, we had an ultra-Orthodox Jewish caller tell us. He's called in the show before, and we've given him some time to make his case and then shown him ultimately, or point out to our listeners ultimately, why the case he was making actually hurt his own case. This was it. Back in early August, Hasidic Jew predicts the manifestation of the Messiah in September. So you can watch that by going to my website, AskDrBrown.org. Just click on the YouTube icon, and it will take you to our YouTube channel. You can watch that and many, many other videos. But this is an eye-opener where an ultra-Orthodox Jew is saying that this is going to be the time now, the Messiah, which in his mind is the deceased leader of the Lubavitch movement who died in 1994 at the age of 92, Menachem Mendel Schneerson, that he will be manifest as the Messiah for the whole world to see in September. So that ain't going to happen, by the way. That's not going to happen. If it happened, it would be a resurrected Antichrist, but that's not going to happen. Anyway, a lot of interesting talk about this month, September, blood moons and Shemitah and all of this. My good friend Jonathan Kahn, falsely accused of predicting all of these things are going to be happening in September. He's not predicted. He's said that God does not have to do anything this September. He's looking at patterns and saying God's getting our attention and giving us a warning. And with that, I wholeheartedly concur. But a lot is going on. So you get to call, you get to weigh in, and I'm happy to answer your questions. And as my commentary on Job is finished, but I'm now translating the whole book, and we're going to add that to the commentary. I'm translating the book of Job now, verse by verse, and really enjoying doing that, having done the difficult work of figuring out what it said in the commentary. Now it's a little easier to do the translation. If you've got a Job-related question, I'll take your calls as well. 866-34-TRUTH.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Blood drinking swine! Blood drinking swine! Child killers! Child killers!
These are sounds from the protests against the visit to the UK of Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. A lot of hostility, a lot of anger, a lot of hatred on display. 866-34-TRUTH on this thoroughly Jewish Thursday. Before I go to the phones, Matt, let's play clip number 14. This is Lady Pamela Hardiman. This is what she has to say in terms of Israel and the Jewish people and the Prime Minister's visit.
And what should happen to the Israelis that live there?
I don't care, they can off, basically. Go into the sea. They're not coming here. We would actually march against Zionists coming here as refugees. We would.
So you want the basically genocide of the Israelis, yeah? That's what you're saying. You're saying you want...
6 million Jews there.
6 million Jews. So would you want another Holocaust?
I don't know what the Holocaust is. The Jews.
Who?
The Jews. We're fighting them.
You do realise 20% of Israel are not Jewish, yeah? You do realise 20% are Arab.
You stand there.
You said you want six million Jews in the sea. I want them out of Israel.
You'll have to kill them all. You'll have to kill them all.
Well, so be it.
Why don't you stop?
Unreal. That's the hostility. That's the hatred. Those are the sentiments. They are out there. 866-34-TRUTH. We go to Charlotte, North Carolina. Betty, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Good afternoon, Dr. Brown. I'm recalling the Bible. The people who curse Israel, God will curse them. So look at the borders. Look at these refugees pouring into Europe. With their ideology that's coming to America, with this so-called new ideology, instead of helping the Jewish people and trying to help preserve Israel, they are trying to turn the country against them, but they will reap a harvest of devastation because they bought it upon themselves. God is a loving God. They opened the door wide, and the politicians, for all these refugees with the ideology, as they blow up people, behead them, they're bringing on their self-destruction. So they can yell all they like in England and go crazy all over Europe. It's finished. Europe is finished. It is so finished.
Got it. Right now, there's going to have to be some backbone. There's going to have to be some backbone in European leaders to recognize the radicality of radical Islam, to recognize the violence and murderous nature of radical Islam, and to realize that if they do not take a strong and clear stand, especially just with demographics, less and less babies being born to Europeans, more and more babies being born to Muslims, and many of them radical, you're going to see a shift in the society. Wake up time, 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Dallas. Brandon, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hey, Dr. Brown. I was talking about as a Christian, I know that the Jews observe Saturday as the Sabbath day, and I was wondering with Sunday that we observe as a Sabbath day in America, and is that something that we should change? Should we observe, Saturday as a Sabbath day, or what should we do with that? And it's according to not working and making that our holiday of worshiping the Lord.
Well, you're certainly welcome to, but there's no requirement to. The seventh day Sabbath was specifically given to Israel, and that was a sign between Israel and the nations. When God gave it in a specific way, beginning in Exodus, the 16th chapter. So for the Gentile world, Christians, to say that we should now all take this on, that all followers of Jesus, even Gentiles, should take this on. There's no biblical mandate for it. Paul warns against anything like that in Colossians 2 by saying that the substance of the Sabbath is the Messiah, that the Sabbath itself is the shadow. The substance is the Messiah. That's where we put our emphasis. And because it's become something widespread in the church for many centuries to celebrate in a gathering on the resurrection of Jesus on a Sunday, the first day of the week, it's fine if we do that. Now, if somehow there was a shift in church culture and more of the church embraced a seventh-day Sabbath and celebrated in corporate gatherings, then fine, great. And if an individual believer feels it's important to do that, great. No problem whatsoever. But to make it anything binding or to make it anything required, that's something that would definitely be wrong. For example, the way Seventh-day Adventists teach it, that this is the day that everyone has to keep, I differ with that. But if someone feels in their own life, you know, I feel to do this, or especially if you're a Jewish believer, as I am, and you say, you know, this is our covenant, and I still want to do it even though it's not binding, great. But I'm perfectly happy to celebrate with everyone on a Sunday and preach and gather and worship on a Sunday. And if that's when people have as a day of rest, that's fine. So it's ultimately a matter of individual conscience. The New Testament never mandated the switch to Sunday. The New Testament never said this is the new Sabbath. To call it the new Sabbath was something that the church did centuries later, really without authority. But to say, hey, this is something that we've now developed and we feel is good and constructive and it glorifies Jesus, great, fine. So it's a matter of conscience, but I would not pull away from the rest of the body over this issue.
Okay. And as far as, you know, the it says, you know, the Ten Commandments, you shall work, you know, about you shall work 6 days and on the seventh you shall rest. So is that something, you know, that you say it don't matter if it's Saturday or Sunday, is it something that you should definitely rest on that seventh day regardless if it's Saturday or Sunday?
I believe that the principle of putting aside one day to rest and honor the Lord is an important principle because of the busyness of life and the need to be refreshed. But nowhere does the Bible say that only the Ten Commandments from the Sinai Covenant now apply to everybody and that the Sabbath is now switched to Sunday. So we take those seriously, but we interpret them in the light of the New Testament. I believe that we should have a day of rest and a day set aside to go before the Lord, and be it Sunday or Saturday or another day of the week, I believe that's important for our lifestyle and before the Lord.
Okay. And one more question. With as far as the Jewish traditions on holidays, and I'm not sure, I'm not familiar with all of those, but as a Christian, should I be observing any certain days that the Jews do, or does that matter?
No, the traditions are Jewish traditions. You can read about them and find them interesting. But for example, Jewish Sabbath traditions, you can't drive on the Sabbath. Jewish Sabbath traditions, you can't cut your fingernails. Jewish Sabbath traditions, you can't put a light on at night on a Friday night or Saturday during the day because that's using electricity. You can't cook, because you use a fire to cook. So there are all kinds of things that you would be terribly, terribly restricted. You can't use a hard brush to brush your hair because that would be work. You can't write several words or letters. That would be work. You can't carry something. So if you wanted to read some book and go take a drive in your car and sit in the woods and read, you can't carry the book and you can't drive in your car. Those are all Jewish traditions. So they're interesting. And for Jewish people, very meaningful, but nothing that we have to be concerned with in terms of commands from God or anything like that. Hey, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. 866-34-TRUTH. But again, Brandon, I strongly encourage you to come to your own conclusions through your own study of Scripture and respect the rest of the body, but live out your convictions. 866-34-TRUTH. All right, before I go back to the phones with your Jewish-related questions, next Tuesday night. All right, so today's Thursday, so just 6 days from now, 5 days, next Tuesday night, I will be in Dallas, Texas, God willing, and I'll be recording shows with James Robeson on Outlasting the Gay Revolution for his Life TV network. You can get tickets that are free to attend. We'd love to meet you down there in the live audience. So all of you listening to me in the DFW area, please join me next Tuesday night. All right, it'll be Life TV, great shows talking about outlasting the gay revolution with Reverend James Robeson. I'll be right back.
Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome to Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. Michael Brown, thanks for joining us on the Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. You know, a clip we played, a lead-in for the last segment, you may not have heard the words with the yelling in this protest in the UK with the trip of Prime Minister Netanyahu there, but not only are they calling for him to be sentenced, arrested and sentenced for war crimes, but there are protesters yelling, blood-drinking swine. I mean, it's sick, sick, crazy stuff, as ugly as it comes, and it's becoming more and more mainstream. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to, is it Fail in Greensboro, North Carolina?
Yes. Hi, Dr. Brown.
Hello.
Hi. I just have one question about the book of Job. I have read Job. I've heard ministers preach on Job. But never have I ever heard a minister to connect Job to the Jews or the plan that God has for man. They always take the book of Job and use excerpts, but never connect the dots. So could you please connect the dots for me?
Yes, and thank you for listening to messages on Job and raising that point. Is Job in any way a picture of Israel as a whole, or how does Job relate to the larger question of the human race? Let's first answer the question about Job and Israel. On the one hand, Israel's sin brought about judgment, whereas Job did not sin, and yet this horrible attack came. So in that sense, Job would be like the righteous remnant within Israel that suffered when the nation sinned and went into exile when the nation sinned, even though it did not sin itself. But what's fascinating is in the 42nd chapter of Job, it uses a phrase, shuv shavut, in Hebrew, which is literally to turn the captivity or restore the fortunes. And what it says is that when Job prayed for his friends, then God turned his captivity or restored his fortunes. So he was healed, and suddenly favor and grace came back upon him. And many believe, and I think you can make a good case for this, that the book of Job was finally written and distribute it at a time of great suffering in Israel's history, perhaps right before the Babylonian captivity or even during the Babylonian exile, and that it had a message of hope and restoration, that if the people would humble themselves as Job did and pray, that God would restore the nation back to the land. So there is that possible application there. As far as the human race as a whole, here's what I would look at. If you think of God creating man in the first place, that meant that God would create us knowing the wrong choices we would make, knowing the hell on earth that would bring, knowing the terrible suffering we would pass through, and yet knowing that in the end, it would be worth it all, and that we would become something we had never become before, and we would know God in a way that we had never known him before. So in the same way with Job, now in our case, we sinned, we were guilty. In Job's case, that's not what brought on the attack. But the lesson is that even though we pass through hell on this earth, even though we go through horrific suffering, the end result, if we'll humble ourselves and have an encounter with God, the end result will be better than the beginning. The acharit, the final end, will be better than the reshit, the beginning, which is what Bildad says in Job 8, and which is actually experienced by Job in chapter 42. So the parallel with the human race as a whole is that it seems right now that there is no good reason that God would have created man knowing there'd be so much suffering and pain, but the end result will be a people who know God better than Adam did. The end result will be a people who see God in a way that Adam never could have and who themselves become something they never could have been. It's the redemptive side of suffering. And then lastly, it does answer the question of why do some things happen to the righteous that are inexplicable? And the answer is there are many things we will not understand in this world. But if we hang on, don't blame the person and don't blame God, but worship him and hang on, he will turn things around for the good. Those are some of the comments I'd make based on studying Job over these years.
Yes, thank you very much. And as soon as you said that, the scripture that came to my mind was Deuteronomy 29:29, and there's some things are just the secrets of God,
yes.
And we won't
yeah.
know it.
Exactly. Okay. That verse is very relevant because when God reveals himself to Job, he never answers his questions. He never explains the issues of injustice. He never explains why Job suffered. What he does instead is show why you must reverence and worship God. You know, it's like this. When a little child is having questions, a three-year-old child is having questions, there's certain things a three-year-old can't understand. And you say, look, you just have to trust mommy. Was mommy right about this? Yes. Was mommy right about this? Yes. Does mommy know how to drive the car and go to the doctor's office? Yes. Did the doctor help you last time? Okay, then just trust mommy and trust the doctor. That's in a simple way, what ends up happening. Job realizes, oh my God, God, you are God. Not only mighty, powerful, wise, transcendent, good. How could I ever think I was going to lecture you? But does this question get answered? No. So the secret things belong to the Lord our God, Deuteronomy 29:29. That which is open and revealed belongs to us and our children to do all the words of this teaching. So what we do know, that's what we have to act on and live out. Thank you for the call. I appreciate it. I welcome questions on the book of Job, 866-34-TRUTH. All right. There's some great questions I'm looking at on my screen here. We'll get back to those on the other side of the break. Be sure to check out this week's special resource offer. I believe you'll be blessed by it, helped by it, a very special price on the Hyper Grace book and a CD on God's True Grace. And let me encourage you to be praying for us. Can I give you a couple things to pray for? Pray that God would continue to amplify our voice, to open more and more doors to get the message out through radio, through TV, secular TV in particular, through writing, through articles, through books, that God would amplify our voice and multiply our efforts. Can I get you to agree with me for that? And that God will meet every need to enable us to expand our efforts. So many open doors, some amazing and wonderful open doors for Jewish ministry. We need more staffing to take advantage of the harvest that is out there and to reach more and more Jewish people with the good news of the Messiah. So much of what we want to do with putting out cutting-edge videos and things that'll just be such great resources, they're all there. Everything's in place. We just need greater funding. So would you believe God with us for those things, that he'd amplify our voice, that he'd open more doors, that he'd increase our funding? And if he can help us with a one-time gift or becoming a monthly torchbearer, thank you in advance. We are listener supported. The simplest way to help, just go to the website, Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org. Just click on donate. Thank you for standing with us.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thoroughly Jewish Thursday, some hip-hop Yeshua HaMashiach rap. Michael Brown, delighted to be with you. 866-34-TRUTH. Look, friends, when you see the rising anti-Israel sentiments around the world, when you see the increasing hostility towards Israel, when you have Iran saying Israel will not exist in 25 years, when you see all of this happening, you can't just shrug your shoulders and say, it's just rhetoric. It's not just rhetoric. Do you know how many terrorist assaults, terrorist strikes are stopped by Israel every single week? Every single week. Every day, potential terrorist strikes are stopped. They are preempted. Because of that, Israeli lives are saved. And Israel would like nothing more than for Hamas to say, we put down our weapons, we want to live in peace with you, we'll control Gaza, and we'll live in peace with you, let's work together as friends and neighbors. Israel would rejoice! But it's not a possibility. Why? Because Hamas is sworn by its very beliefs and covenant to want to wipe out Israel. And it would be as fundamental for them as us as followers of Jesus wanting other people to believe in Jesus. It is that fundamental to them, except it is murderous and destructive. You don't just shrug your shoulders over this. Iran is financing terror around the world. You don't just shrug your shoulders, say, whatever. And you don't give them billions or tens of billions or $100 billion plus and remove sanctions knowing that the money is going to go right into terrorism. You don't do that. 866-34-TRUTH. Oh, by the way, unless some Democratic senators change their mind, that's exactly what America is going to do. There's going to be blood on our hands. There's going to be blood of Americans on our hands, not only blood of Israelis, but blood of Americans on our hands, because we'll finance Iran and Iran will put that money into terror. And some of that terror will be carried out against our own soldiers. 866-34-TRUTH. I was going to go to Durham, but I won't. Let's go to Seagrove, North Carolina. Todd, welcome to the line of fire.
Thank you, Dr. Brown. This is a question I've been curious about for several years now. Is there any historical secular account of Queen Esther of Persia?
No, we don't really have secular confirmation. It's really it's a matter of trying to speculate and where certain things could fit and not fit. But no, we do not have secular confirmation of that. There are lots of things in Israelite Judean history we have confirmation of. Even something as small as the last chapter of the book of Jeremiah, which is also repeated in 2 Kings, where Jehoiakim in exile is raised up and is given a portion from at the king's table every day. And there's actually a Babylonian inscription that was found mentioning him by name and his portion that he would get. So there are things with striking confirmation, but the Book of Esther is not one of those that has the outside historical confirmation. So you have the critics will say the whole thing is just a myth. And others will say, no, it's just a story. No one ever took it seriously as history. It's just a story. And others who say, no, the events are accurately described. We just don't have clear confirmation. Now, there are some who've argued for confirmation of a Mordecai type of a figure. And in fact, I'll talk about that. We got a break here. I'll talk about that on the other side of the break.
Flame, send the fire. It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Yeah, Jesus, the Messiah. Jesus, the Messiah. Get the message out. We've got some friends, Chazakim, who have been getting the message of Jesus, the Messiah, out in a unique way. 866-34-TRUTH. So Todd and Seagrove, I have in front of me the IVP Bible background commentary to the Old Testament. And among other things, it will go line for line and say where we have historical confirmation. So you have many specifics that are confirmed in different ways. For example, chapter 2, verse 3, the beauty search, looking for a new queen. It says this practice is only documented in the time of the Sasanian king, Chosroes, not sure how to pronounce that, sorry, the second. AD 600, when each satrap was commanded to seek out beautiful girls to be sent up to the king. So it does say that this happened earlier. So the kind of thing that was known in the ancient Persian world. And then with the keeping of the records and things like that, those types of things are done. But it says, for example, to chapter 2, verse 17, there are no contemporary records from either Persian inscriptions or Greek historians that mention Esther or any of the events in which she was involved. So this remains something where conservative scholars look at it, try to see where this can best be placed. But some of the descriptions, the palace, the things like that, rightly and accurately describe the royal annals which were kept, the position that Haman would have potentially filled. And then, of course, Mordecai being in exile, and he does have a good foreign name. Mordecai, part of it being the Babylonian god Marduk, was the name he was obviously given in exile. So those are all interesting things. But specific confirmation, no, we don't have that. And again, that's something that conservative historians wrestle with. How do we work that out without the historical confirmation? So thank you, sir, for asking. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Reidsville, North Carolina. Demita, welcome to the line of fire.
Hi, Dr. Brown. How are you?
Doing well. Thank you.
Great. Listen, I'm calling because you were talking about the book of Job, and I wanted to just share with you why I love that book so much. One is that it opens up with the sons of God coming to present themselves, and it says that Satan comes with them. And God begins to commend Job to Satan, you know, considering him. And it ends with Job saying, after this adversity, this tremendous test or trial, as James talks about, with him saying, I had heard of you, but now I know you. That, to me, really illustrates that, one, the sovereignty of God, two, that God orchestrates, he authorizes, and he allows. And I take such comfort in that nothing that I'm going through is without his working on my behalf, that is bringing out of me something that is in me, it is encouraging me, that is in that relationship building in that adversity. And so I just wanted to say that, because I think a lot of times we think of suffering as something that we don't want to do, when James clearly says it's, you know, we're going to be tested, we're going to be tried. It's an examination of our faith. And I am so happy that in that I'm not alone.
Yeah, I appreciate that perspective, because, again, inexplicable things do happen. There are trials and tests. Sometimes the trial is a result of our obedience, that we're growing, and now there's the test before we get to the next level. The test to bring out what's really in us. The test to prove our loyalty. Sometimes the test is brought about by other circumstances. But ultimately, if we know we're seeking to please the Lord, if we know that we're seeking to honor him, we haven't brought this on ourselves. In other words, if God forbid someone decides you know, they're sick and tired of the gospel. They're going to go out and get drunk one night. They go out and get drunk. They get in the car. They get in a bad accident. Now they're in the hospital. They can't say, oh, God, why are you bringing this on me? No, they opened the door. They did something foolish. But what about the person that's driving in the car with their family on their way to church, and they get hit by the drunk driver? And now they're all in the hospital. You don't have answers. Why did this happen? The drunk person walked away fine. The Christians on the way to church are either dead or on their way to the hospital. There are things that don't make sense. And there also really is an adversary, a Satan, a devil, who wants to destroy and who hates us. But if we recognize God is not bringing horrific things on us as a sign of his love, he doesn't say, I love you so much, I'm going to give you cancer today. I love you so much, I'm going to kill your kid in a car wreck today. No, there is a Satan, a devil, working behind the scenes to destroy. But behind all that, there is a God working for good.
Yeah.
There's another layer. There's a deeper layer. And often we only see the superficial layer, and we don't recognize that if we'll trust God and honor God, what was meant to be the worst thing can end up being the best thing.
The best thing. And it's such a relationship builder. I mean, we don't want to suffer, but you know what? It's a part of life. And I think that we fool ourselves, we deceive ourselves when we think we're not going to have adversity in this life. And there's a whole bunch of doctrine that says that or are teaching that, but it's such falsehood.
You're absolutely right. There's some that teach that Job opened the door to, you know, he feared, and that's why these things came on him, because they can't accept that this just could have happened. Now, look, we have authority over Satan in the New Testament, but the New Testament constantly talks about the trying of our faith, even the trying of our faith just because we're believers, the trying of our faith because we're followers of Jesus, that there's going to be opposition and resistance. And look, when I'm doing a workout, when I'm pushing hard, it's painful, it's unpleasant, it's difficult, but afterwards, you feel much better. Afterwards, your body is in better shape because of it. So normally the nature of a severe trial is that you hope you never have to go through something like that again. However, you know that you wouldn't be the person you are today unless you had gone through it.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
You are very welcome, and I love the enthusiasm in your voice, the smile in your voice as you talk about that. You know, one more thing on Job. I read Randy Alcorn's wonderful book, If God is Good, in preparation for my debate with Professor Bart Ehrman on the question, does the Bible provide an adequate answer to the problem of suffering? We did that. Was that back in 2010, I think, at Ohio State? You can watch it by going to my website, askdrbrown.org, just typing in Ehrman, E-H-R-M-A-N, Professor Bart Ehrman, how the acclaimed New Testament scholar and well-known agnostic. Randy Alcorn mentions that there was a college teacher, a woman, who gave her students an assignment and said, all right, take out a piece of paper, and I want you to write down on the front the 10 worst things that ever happened to you in your life. So yeah, you have to give that considerable thought. Okay, you write down 10. Now flip the paper over and write on the back the 10 best things that ever happened to you. And invariably, some of the items on the one side, the worst things, were the items on the other side, the best things. Isn't that remarkable? That some of the worst things that ever happened to us actually turned out to be some of the very best things. 866-34-TRUTH. Linda in Manhattan, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hi, Doc. Just thanking you for taking my call, and also want to thank all the wonderful brothers and sisters in Christ who call you. I learn as much from their questions as I do from your answers, so I'm doubly blessed. And I just have one question and one quick one. I'd like to know, is there any indication as to what ethnicity Job was? I know, was he Arab or what was he?
No, we actually do not know. The land of Uz, some have located him in what would be an Edomite setting, but that would not be Arab. I mean, today that is populated by an Arab population. But he's definitely non-Israelite. That's how he's being painted, as a non-Israelite, kind of an everyman, even though some rabbinic traditions trace him back to Esau or something like that. In point of fact, we don't know about genealogy or ethnicity. The only one of the participants, when you've got Job, and then you've got Eliphaz, Bildad, and Zophar, and then Elihu. Elihu's the only one who has a genealogy, and he would have more of an Israelite name and genealogy. But it's specifically set as if it's taking place in patriarchal times, like the times of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and as a non-Israelite before God had given the law to Israel. And yet the book of Job presupposes that they all know about Israelite law. I'll explain that on the other side.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome to Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. This is Michael Brown, and you are listening to The Line of Fire. So, Linda in Manhattan, just to clarify what I was saying, the book of Job is written clearly by an Israelite author, and the book of Job is written later in Israelite history. It's not written by Moses, as some have thought. There's no evidence for that whatsoever. It's just an ancient tradition. But it's written later in Israelite history, perhaps the generation or two after Jeremiah. It's hard to pinpoint, but there are allusions to other parts of the Bible. There are rephrasings of Scripture in the mouths of the participants. There are allusions to other verses or ironic usages of other verses in the Bible. So the author is fully aware of the content of a lot of Scripture at that point and is then putting it on the mouths of the participants, filling in the words that were spoken in their dispute with Job. So it's written for an Israelite audience, for an audience familiar with Israel's traditions and with the sacred scriptures of Israel. But it's written in such a way that is putting Job back before those times. So they're not quoting, well, as it says in John 3:16, well, yeah, but what about what Paul says in Philippians 2:6? Yeah, but I think, it's not quoting that. But it's alluding to these verses, it's paraphrasing them, it's putting on the lips of the participants. But Job himself would be pre-Israelite and a Semitic person, but specific ethnicity, we do not know. If you can trace him over to Edom, to the east of Israel, that would be the best guess we have. Beyond that, we do not know specifically. Thanks for the call, and thanks for the great word about our callers. Much, much appreciated. 866-34-TRUTH. Let me just give you just a little footnote, all right, from my Job commentary. in terms of location, this won't be out until maybe next November, October at the very earliest, otherwise November. But in the Zondervan Fictorial Encyclopedia of the Bible, G. Frederick Owens, writing about Utz, where it's to be located, points to probably Wadi Sirhan, which is 50 miles east of Amman, so Jordan today, and continues in a southeasterly direction within 10 miles of Jauf, an important caravan junction of central Arabia. But this would have been prior to that, all right? So he concludes that this is the one land area that fits the biblical description of the land of Utz. Others are not so certain. Others have said the location of the land of Utz is not precisely known. It may have been a general term for the Near East. A southern location is implied in Lamentations 4:21, where the daughter of Edom lives in the land of Utz. However, in Jeremiah 25:20-21, Utz is associated with Philistia, Edom, and Moab. And then Job scholar David Klein says this: the importance of the name Utz lies not in where such a place is, but in where it is not. Israelites themselves may not have known its precise location, but they will have known, as we do, that it is not in Israel. That is the point. The name, therefore, signifies that the action has a horizon that is not peculiarly Israelite. So even though it's written for the people of Israel by an Israelite author, it's saying this is the message of mankind even beyond that. And then another Job scholar, J. Gerald Jansen, in his book At the Scent of Water, says the effect of such an opening line, Ishayah Be'eretz Uz, which I would translate it, there was once a man in the land of Uz, men who lived in the land of Uz, just to put it back to that ancient setting. Jansen says the effect of such an opening line is to place Job at a distance from the reader, like stories that begin once upon a time or long ago and far away. The Catholic leader Gregory the Great sees special significance in the mention of Uz, saying it is for this reason that we are told where the holy man dwelt, that the meritoriousness of his virtue might be expressed, for who knows not that Uz is a land of the Gentiles. So he's saying that Job is all the more an exceptional man because he is a Gentile, and therefore a God-fearing Gentile would have been even more rare and exceptional. So in short, we don't know about the ethnicity, but there's a lot of fascinating stuff. I mean, I spend a lot of time on the opening verses of Job in my commentary. And tell you what, since I've been working on the translation of Job, here's how I translate the opening verses. There was once a man in the land of Uz whose name was Job, and this man was full of integrity. To me, that's the best way I could express what Tom means in Hebrew. It's normally translated blameless. Some would say wholehearted. But to me, because it's related to Tumah, which is integrity, and that's what it means, I decided to make a break with other translators. There was once a man in the land of Uz, his name was Job, and this man was full of integrity and upright. He feared God and turned away from evil. Seven sons and three daughters were born to him. His possessions were 7,000 sheep, 3,000 camels, 500 yoke of oxen, 500 female donkeys, and a large number of servants. So this man was greater than anyone else in the East. It was the custom of his sons to host a feast each when his turn came around, and they would invite their sisters to eat and drink with them. When the days of feasting had run their course, Job would send for his children and have them ritually purified. And he would get up early in the morning and sacrifice burnt offerings for each of them. For Job said to himself, "Perhaps my children sinned and cursed God in their hearts." This is what Job did all the time. On a particular day, the divine beings came to present themselves before Yahweh, and the adversary came along with them. Yahweh said to the adversary, "Where have you come from?" The adversary answered Yahweh, "From roaming through the earth and going back and forth in it." Yahweh said to the adversary, "Have you considered my servant Job? There was no one like him on the earth, a man full of integrity, one who fears God and turns away from evil." The adversary answered Yahweh, "Does Job fear God for nothing? You put a protective hedge around him, his family, and all that he has. You bless the work of his hands so that his possessions have spread throughout the land. But stretch out your hand and strike all that he has, and he will surely curse you to your face." And Yahweh said to the adversary, "All right then, everything he has is in your power. Just don't raise your hand against him." The adversary then left the presence of Yahweh. That's the first 12 verses of Job as I've translated it into the fourth chapter now and having a blast working on this amazing, amazing book. Yes, you've been listening to Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. Thank you for the calls. Thank you for the questions. Thank you for the comments. Thank you for your support, your solidarity. We're here to help you. We're here to equip you. We are here to be a blessing to you. And if we have been a blessing to you, we appreciate it if you could stand with us. If you could join our team today as a monthly supporter, as a torchbearer, boy, that would mean the world to us to enlist your support and to amplify our voice and increase our efforts to find out all the benefits that come your way, how we sow back into you, and the benefits of how you help us. Go to my website now, Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org. And just click on donate. You'll see there how to become a torchbearer. Right on the homepage, click on how to become a torchbearer. My bottom line today, the book of Job, as ancient as it is, speaks to us as if it was written in our backyard yesterday.